The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
I was born here in Atlanta, Georgia, but I guess I grew up in Los Angeles. My parents divorced when I was about 7.
Right.
And my mother was a radio journalist here in Atlanta, and she got a job out in Los Angeles.
Doing just...
She actually was very well known. She had a radio show here in Atlanta called the Mickey and Teddy Show on Ring Radio.
Okay.
I heard Neil Bortz used to work for her.
Okay.
And then she was the first woman to ever win a Peabody Award
really?
For journalism for a story right here in Atlanta on police brutality.
And what is her name?
Back in the 70s. It was Teddy Levison then.
Right.
And Teddy Sanford now.
Right.
She's 83, I think. 82,
and still with
and
us.
Going strong. Oh, yeah. So is my dad. He's 93.
Good for them.
Amazing.
That is awesome.
I hope I have those genes.
Me too. So you were growing up in Los Angeles.
Yes. And then moved around. Went to boarding school, went to college in Pittsburgh.
But when you were, before Pittsburgh, what did you want to be when you were like young Jenny?
Young Jenny? I think I wanted to be an actor.
Right?
That was sort of my first love.
Did you go to like Beverly Hills High or anything?
No, but I did live in Beverly Hills when I first lived out there, but I went to a much smaller school. And then by high school, I went to boarding school in Massachusetts.
Because you were horrible?
Because I was a devious little child. I think it was just my parents were divorced. I didn't want to live with either one of them.
So you're like, F this.
Yeah, I'm like, get me out of here where I can, you know... Do something else. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, usually boarding schools, they don't necessarily focus on the arts unless it's an arts school.
No, but it happened to be hot, you know, something that was well known for the arts. That's not why I went there. But and then I was just gravitated towards that. So I ended up that's what I ended up wanting to go to school and studying.
Okay.
I ended up and then went to Carnegie Mellon.
Oh, really? Excuse me. Pardon me.
Excuse me.
Carnegie Mellon. You might be the first
and
person.
And now I sling soup.
And now you sling soup. Well, we have a long way to go, though, because so you did act for a while.
I did. I was an actor in New York. I did some soap opera work for a couple years.
Yeah.
I did theater, roaming around the country. But I just, that whole looking for your next gig forever.
It's a bitch, man.
It is a bitch. And I wanted to travel and experience things. And it's hard when you're always broke. So.
Yeah, and only, you tell me about you, but only later in life have I even begin to grasp the concept that my art and my business are two different things.
Yes.
And if you don't like my art, it doesn't mean I'm a failure. So I did stand up for 10 years.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I loved it. And I loved it, and I lived in LA, but I was always broke and thought that's what you do. Right? Like,
yeah.
This is what you do. You're broke. You suffer. Maybe one day you'll get discovered. Just that bullshit myth that many of us go to LA to find.
Exactly.
And I realize now, like with the business skills that I have, like, oh, this is what smart people do. And if they say no, it doesn't mean you're not funny or you're not liked. It's just you can make this adjustment here.
Exactly.
And I was, no, dude, I was like, I took it on the chin every time.
Do you still do it for fun?
No. How is getting up at night in front of drunk strangers and hoping they laugh? How is that fun?
I took a stand-up class last year because that was one of my on my list.
Right.
And it was hard. 2 minutes is a long time, and three to stand up in front of people.
I have zero regrets. Mm-hmm. It absolutely shaped me, and it did make me. I say this to people all the time, that when I had my first business, mm-hmm. and you know, you go into pitch meetings or whatever, I always say, like, listen, I've been booed off stage. At the, what's it called? What's the black room called? At the Uptown Comedy Corner?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you're not going to scare me. So that, like, I think that's good, mm-hmm. right? And then the hundreds of other one-nighters and crappy rooms I did where you don't get laughs and you learn to just kind of keep fighting. Like, right. all that teaches you. So if I'm going to pitch you my thing, you're not that scary to me.
Exactly.
I feel like that's an awesome, yeah. you know, it certainly taught me a lot of skills that way.
Yes. And I think that helps.
But how does one, but did you think, like, When you got soap opera work, I don't know what you were on, but you were like, okay, I'm going to be the next whatever. I'm going to be some ingenue. What were you thinking was going to happen? Or did you want to be just like somebody that won awards?
I wanted to be a theater actor.
Okay.
So the soap opera work, even though it pays obviously very well, it was like the worst time of my life. I thought the people were horrible that were on it, both of the shows I was on, and not kind and only cared about their fame or celebrity. Right. I mean, for that time, soap operas, do they still have soap operas?
It's interesting because that's actually an interesting concept, because what is daytime TV anymore?
Yeah.
I can tell you, when I go to get my tire changed, or if I go to a doctor's appointment, there's something on during the day, and it's never good.
Yeah, it was a bigger deal, like back in the in the 80s.
Huge.
That was when I was doing it, but I didn't find it a great industry. I didn't like the way you film things, and same thing in movies where they might film the end before the beginning. I was just trained as a theater actor. That was my love. So that was sort of my dream. I thought, yeah, I was going to be on Broadway for 50 years.
Right, and then what happened?
And then I wasn't getting work on Broadway. And I was, you know, traveling around in these small theaters, living out of a suitcase. I ended up back here in Atlanta. But I always worked in the restaurant industry on the side.
Right.
And I just started to realize how much I enjoyed it more than what I was doing, and that it had its own sense of theater to it.
Right.
But I could be in a little bit more control of what I was doing.
And one day you went up and you said, you know what the world needs more of? Fucking soup and salad.
Exactly. No, I went. Yeah. I still think that, especially in 100 degree heat, it's just awesome.
Right?
In Atlanta.
Right?
That really, the whole idea of soup came from a trip around the world. I had come back to Atlanta to actually do a show one summer, and I was working for a friend of mine who was a caterer on the side. I started, you know, enjoying the food business, stayed here, and never left Atlanta.
Right.
And I ended up getting married, meeting a man that I was married to for a while. That's a whole nother interview. I can come back for that.
That's a what?
A whole other interview. Oh. I can come back, you know, for that.
Okay.
His
last name wasn't Levison.
No.
Did you change your name for a short time?
I did. And it's so hard to change your name back when you get divorced. It took me a long time. I was here, and I really wanted to learn how to cook, but I did not want to go to culinary school. I wanted to do something very untraditional, so I convinced him that we should start traveling around the world, and we were going to leave Atlanta for a couple years, and not that we had any money to do so, but we took whatever money we had gotten from when we got married, you know, $10,000 maybe, got to around the world tickets. He was a chef, so I had a leg up with someone who had some experience. And we would just start traveling and trying to meet people when we needed money to get a job, you know, a few days here and there. And then I just started asking random people that I would meet to teach me something from their country. Do you have a recipe? We got invited to people's homes. You know, I have a lot of chutzpah, nice Jewish girl. So.
Right, of course. And you married Jew or Gentile?
No, I married a Gentile Frenchman.
I think we know why that didn't turn out.
I know, exactly. I should have listened to my mother. No.
Why do you want to marry a Frenchman? Does your mother sound like that?
No.
My mother sounds like that.
She does.
Not that. I mean.
No, but they're always right.
Are you kidding me? If my mother was always right, I would have never left here. I would have never gone to try stand-up.
Really?
Yeah.
My mom always was like, now that I'm older, she thinks I'm going to like drop dead. But she's like, don't do that. It's dangerous. But she used to be totally the opposite.
My mother doesn't want you to drive at night.
Yeah, I guess
like
my mom.
When she's talking, she thinks she's talking to like an 11-year-old, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Don't go drive. What time are you leaving? It's dangerous to drive at night. Anyhow.
So we traveled. I learned all these recipes and I came back and I had them all spread out in front of me. And I realized that like 90% of them were soups of all these recipes I collected from this fantastic trip. And that was my aha, like, let's do some soup. So, of course, I had to go to New York and check out the soup Nazi and see if that was a real thing. And
right.
Which he was.
Right.
You know, he had this little place on the Upper West Side, and I waited in line 2 hours, and he hit my hand when I asked for a taste. And I was like, this is it. I'm doing it. I'll be the soup Jew. I'll be the nice one.
And what year is this?
That was, I opened in 1999, so that was probably 98.
Okay. Did Super Salad exist yet?
It did. Okay. I think it did. But I'm not much to pay attention to what other people are doing. So
that was the first one that I think
I remember
heard of. And that's always how I say it, so.
Super Salad. It did. And my original goal was like not to have salad. I was just going to have soups.
And did you know the name like right away?
No, I was trying to bless you, think of a name. And my mom and her friend were sitting around. Bless you. You have to sneeze one more time.
It's coming.
And it was my mother's friend who was like, what about Super Jenny? I really like it. And it was just stuck.
Right.
My friend drew the logo on a napkin, you know.
And that was it.
Probably drunk one day, and it stuck. And I don't think we've ever changed it.
And so this was 1999.
That's when we opened.
Which location?
The Buckhead. It was this tiny little space in Buckhead on East Andrews.
Okay.
I think we had 4 seats originally. And then the little space next door became available after a few years. You know, it was just very tiny.
So how long till you thought this is working or this is successful? Because everyone will tell you, you know,
I'm waiting for that moment. I think it's coming.
Well, do we ever get to success, quote unquote? No, right? But yeah. I'm saying a lot of people go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
Some go much faster than you would even think, right? Like when I see places close up after 6 months, I was like, well, what were you thinking? Did you have zero, mm-hmm. like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Whether it's a podcast business or a restaurant or anything, it's like, well, you got to, you know, give it a little bit. Anyway, when did you?
So, you know, I was about 30, 31. I think it was about a year in where I could actually, you know, not have to ask my family for any money.
Right. Were you getting a lot of press?
We started to. Because we had very guerrilla tactics of marketing. You know, we'd sneak out at night and put yard stands all around Buckhead, which is legal, by the way. But I would do it until they took them away. We didn't have money for advertising. We'd just do random crazy stuff. We didn't have probably Twitter and the social media we have today. And so just little by little, we got the word out that we were in this little hidden pocket in Buckhead and started to get a following. And people always laugh and talk about the line out the door, but like the inside, only one or two people could fit in there.
Right.
So the line...
There was always a line out the door.
There's always a line out the door because only one or two could fit inside.
Right.
And then it just, you know, organically sort of grew from there. And I was, you know, I was there. I was working every day, you know, from 5 a.m. to, you know, 5 or whenever we closed at night.
Well, that's nice. You don't have to be there that late, right?
No. I can't. My bedtime's 9. I can't.
Even back then, was it?
You know, unless I'm in a play, yes, I'm such a weenie. I go to bed early. My family makes fun of me because I never want
to. No, I go to bed early too. Trust me. I go to bed early. I think here's what people without kids don't understand. They eat part of your brain.
Yes.
Mentally and emotionally. And so at the end of every day, you're just X percentage more drained than you would be. I'm just saying.
It's true. And I'm just ready to like shut down around 9.
Me too.
So I never could do a nighttime restaurant.
So then how soon before you opened the second one? It was a while, right?
10 years.
Wow. So, did you ever think, well, that's my goal. Let me have more of these. Let me have a chain of these. I just want to make more money here.
No. My goal was never to, I'm not that great about thinking about money. One of my my drawbacks. But no, my goal was to sustain it and to hire some people so I could, didn't have to be there every morning at 5 o'clock.
Right.
I was 10 years in before. Well, no, I guess my son, I adopted my son as a single mother. So I was probably, let's see, he's 15. So I was 5 years in before I knew that I wanted to do this. My friend who now owns his own place, Mitchell Anderson, moved out here from Metro Fresh. Have you heard of that place in Midtown?
Yes.
He has two places. So Mitchell was an actor, working actor in Los Angeles, and he was moving out here to be with his partner, was interested in the food business, and he came in, and I basically trained him of everything I was doing so I could leave for 3 months to adopt my child. And he ended up, you know, loving it and going into the food business, and now he has a couple restaurants of his own.
So I would think, like, if you're, because you've got the one location and you've got X amount of hours, right? There's got to be some sort of limit to how many people can hand out X amount of soup, right?
Yes. There,
so at some point you got to go, well, okay, well, I can either just be happy with this or, because you can't serve more food out of the same location. Right?
Exactly. No, it was getting, you know, I could have been maybe open at night and maybe serve more food, but it just isn't my model or what I was interested in. So I was very happy with the one location. And then one day, this cute little house opened up around the corner that I loved so much and thought, if we could get this house, what could we turn that into? And then we opened the Cafe Jonah, which is my son's name. And it was a little coffee shop and food with a metaphysical bookstore upstairs.
Nice.
So it was just, these were just little dreams I had that I was like, let's try it. Let's jump in and try it.
Right.
So we had that for 5 years. And, you know, we just had started hiring people little by little. And then, you know, Buckhead's going through a giant building boom, and someone owned that little house. And at the end of the 5 years, she wanted to sell it for over $3 million, which I didn't have. So that, you know, it was like, okay, that was a fun run.
So it was like, no big deal. We don't need to open it anywhere else.
I didn't see any cute little house anywhere else that I thought we could do it out of. I didn't want to go into a mall. You know, it just was, had its run. So that's sort of how I find places. There was where we are on the west side. You know, I love that area. And then something came available. I wouldn't say I'm always actively searching of what can we do next.
Just right.
Sort of happens.
It seems like it's a lot of investment of time and money, though, to open a new one.
You know, it is, but I don't, if you've been into some of our stores, I don't, you know, I would say I put in about $50,000 to, I always look for an existing space.
Right.
Except for the History Center, which they did the build out. You know, they were looking for a partner. They did all of that work, which is quite beautiful, which I couldn't have afforded. So it's a lot of time and investment and training staff. But, you know, I put a cap on what I'm going to spend on each location, and we slap some paint up there and make it look cute, and that's pretty much it. It's not a fancy restaurant.
when did Decatur come around?
And Decatur, at almost the same time as the West Side. You know, I got a call from someone saying, you just got to come check out the space. I love Decatur. You know, I spend time in Decatur, so I loved it there. I didn't want to believe that the parking was such a horrible situation.
It is.
It's terrible. And, you know, that's why we ultimately left when our lease was up there. But I wanted to try it. It was, we had a cute spot. Same thing. We just didn't, it was already a restaurant before. That's the big expense in opening a restaurant, the kitchen and the hood and those things that make a kitchen.
Right.
So I just, you know, that's not what I want to do. I want to find something that's a little easier.
You don't see it as any kind of failure when places close?
For a little bit. I have pity parties for, you know, I give myself a few days. Of Decatur, no. We could have stayed there, and it was okay. It just was increasingly hard to find a spot to park. The new landlords were raising the rents. It just wasn't doing as well as the other stores, so I just didn't want to push it.
So the food landscape changes all the time. Mm-hmm. There's always hot new things mm-hmm. coming and going. I mean, if you... Like, if I just happen to hit an article about something closing, and then I go to, like, Atlanta Eater, mm-hmm. and then it just starts listing, like in the same breath, these 50 places open and these 50 places closed, and it's like, what? It's just rearranging, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it really does seem like such a crapshoot about what's going to...
Exactly.
I'm always fascinated. So I've interviewed a handful of chefs, mm-hmm. and I'm just always fascinated that any business, you know, it's tough to get over the 5-year hump, the 10-year hump, like, whatever. But it seems like food especially, there's so many factors that, like, what makes something a success.
Right. Well, and I bet from the chefs you have interviewed, like Kevin, I know Kevin Gillespie and people like that, that they're involved. Like the people that are successful, they're not just opening a restaurant and stepping back. They're highly involved in what's going on. That's right. To me what success is, people that are actually putting the heart in it all the way through. Doesn't mean they don't go on vacation or get to take, you know, do things for themselves, but that they're part of it. They're part of the community. And by the way, that eater that I read all the time, that's my real estate. That's how I look for things that I think, okay, that might work. Or maybe so, that space will be available in a couple of years.
It doesn't ever like sort of depress you? Like, God, all yes. these people are going out of business.
But I feel that there's a trend and you can tell what doesn't work. People get this glamorous notion of what it is to run a restaurant. And it is hard work. You still have to fucking take the trash out.
Yep.
I went to visit my friend
Clean
Mitchell.
Toilets.
Yes, I went to see my friend Mitchell, who just opened his second location, and I took a video because I loved. He was like taking the trash out, mopping the floor at the end of the night, and that's what we have to do still. And I'm lucky; I don't have to mop the floor every night, but. If it needed to be done,
you would do it.
I would do it. I have to do it, and you have, and that's to me what makes it successful.
So you're never looking to well. I did read some article because I like to know just enough about my guests. Mm-hmm. I don't spend hours reading because I want to discover who you are, and so right. And then the audience discovers you with me. That at one point in one of the articles, and I don't know if it was 2013 or 2016, but it did say like, oh, I am looking to do like Chattanooga or Alabama. Or you, is that anything you want to do?
I started probably in 2013 or 14. I started traveling a bit of what would it look like if I wanted to open something outside of Atlanta, like in an actual cold place, like where, Utah
right.
or Colorado.
Because maybe you could sell soup year round.
Yes. You know, my original idea was only to be open 9 months of the year and close for three. And so we closed for one when I first opened. We close every August.
Right.
So everyone got a break, could travel. And then I realized that I still had those bills. And I had to, the more busy we got, the more locations we opened, it just was impossible. But, you know, that's my dream, is to really just be open in the cooler months. That's how the salad started coming, because I needed more things to fill the extra months.
But there was, in fact, a soup and or salad thing, right? Like, there were probably a ton that opened after you
yes.
and had already gone.
Yes,
right?
Yes. There's similar places now.
But I'm saying, I feel like there was definitely a moment there.
Yes, definitely.
That you clearly, you know, you clearly outshined, just like, you know, there was a burger thing however many years ago,
yes.
and there are a few that have remained.
Yes.
But at that time, if you read Eater or whatever the equivalent was back
right.
then, did you think, like, ugh, another one of these places? Or are you just like, hey, man, whatever with the competition?
Yeah, just didn't. I was the only ones back then, like 20 years ago, was that super salad, you know, like a big franchise chain where you can come in, pay one price,
right.
and help yourself. So I didn't notice too much then, but I have, but a few came and went, and then a few are still here that are very similar to us. And that's okay. Yeah. I don't care. You know, I'm just doing my thing, what I love to do.
And how often do you want to, or do you feel you need to update menu or bring in new things or to keep people coming back?
Every day. Every day. Like if the menu changes every day, I'm literally every day still with a stack of cookbooks, reading other people's recipes, looking for new ideas. So, you know, once in a while I'll tell my chefs, okay, we're going to repeat last week's menu. But mostly, you know, when I'm done today with you, I go and I'm starting to work on next week's menus and how can we alter them a little? What should we do? I give them a little leeway with certain things that each chef is different. They can put their spin on something. So yeah, I like to, I'm an Aries. I get bored very quickly.
I'm also an Aries.
You are? When's your birthday?
April 5th.
April 19th.
You're barely, you almost didn't make it.
I know. Maybe I have the two, Taurus and Aries. So I get bored easily, restless. I like to see things changing. And some people like that. Some people want to know they can get chicken noodle every Monday, you know, and we might not be for them because
right.
it does change a lot. You can get my dad's turkey chili every day. That's the only thing.
That's the only thing is your dad's turkey chili. That stays every single day.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you get involved with Jesse Itzler's group?
Well, Jesse, I did another one of my places. It's no longer open. Is I had a juice bar slash little vegan spot called Juicy Jenny, and it was right next to the original Super Jenny. And he was a great customer, so I just started chatting with him. I also knew Sarah because Sarah and I started around the same time in our businesses, and she used to hang out in the original Super Jenny. I don't know if she was still selling fax machines then, but she would hang out with her girlfriends and talk about, you know, what about this for this product?
Right.
And, so I just sort of knew over the years before they ever even met each other. And most recently, Jesse had told me about his group that he was starting, and I was sort of in that original Build Your Life Resume class. And it just, you know, hit me on every level. I love his energy. I love the people in that class. I love the idea of pushing yourself and doing crazy things that you're not prepared for. So that's how I got involved with it.
So I'm someone who has done a lot of self-improvement stuff.
Really? What were you like before?
Well, that's another podcast for another time. But I've done a lot of stuff and actually swore off, not literally, but pretty much swore off any kind of self-improvement or self-help class or book or whatever, because it's what I did for pretty much 20 years. And it's like, okay, I should probably just, why don't I just fucking live some life now?
Yes.
And so I interviewed Jesse 3 years ago for my other show. I have this obstacle racing thing that I do. And I just read about this guy and I was like, oh, he lives in Atlanta and he's a runner and maybe I could talk to him. And his profile has since gone up quite a bit. I don't think it would, but back then I got him on a Facebook note. Hey, how's it going? Can I talk to you?
Yeah, he was just really getting into that space.
Yeah, so we talked. And so then I saw the 29 or 29 thing. And I wanted to do that event. And I was like, I want to go do that event. So I did it, and I loved it. And then...
Were you in Utah when I was there?
No, I was at Vermont a year ago. A year ago, October. Okay. So I don't think it was the first one. It might have been the first Vermont one.
I think it was.
Okay, yeah. So
the second Vermont one. Second Vermont one. First Utah one.
No, I did Vermont.
I know, but at the same year they started Utah. Year.
Exactly. Yes, because people had been the year before. We're talking about the gondola not working and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so I did that event, and I loved it. Listeners, I'm probably remember to link that episode and or the thing I wrote about it. And then I started seeing his ads. You know, I kind of followed him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, like, well, he's charging like $400 for this thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, why not? So... It was, you know, a 6-week class.
Yeah.
And I thought, why not? So I started doing it, and it was great because I did like start to get like some good reminders about stuff. But you know what else happened for me? I was like, I know everything in here. Like this is like all this stuff is in here and I just need to sort of reignite it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I found. And it was less like self-motivation thing or self-help then just like get off your ass and start living your life. Stop talking about stuff, you know, and that's how I want to be. I want to go, you know, when I'm done on this planet, I want to know I killed it.
Right. Well, and so here's what's great is after the class is over and, you know, I'm in this Atlanta group with all these people and they were like, well, we're closing the group. And I'm like, well, that's stupid because we've met all these people. Like, no, we're going to put you into this other group. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, okay, now I'm in this huger group. Mm-hmm. So for that reason alone, there's your $3.99 value right there to have relationships with these kinds of people like yourself, just people who want to get, like you said, like get shit done. I mean, I'm around a lot of those people a lot in terms of the physical stuff because of this obstacle stuff that I do.
Right.
And, you know, I put together a run at Stone Mountain. And we'll talk about your Stone Mountain trips shortly. But I put a quick little like, hey, there's this basic workout I do. We do a loop around the trail. We go up and down. It's like a 6-mile workout. Who wants to be there? And a handful of us came out and they were like really on fire about it. And I was like, dude, I do this shit all the time. Like, this is not that big of a deal to me. But if you're hungry for people that want to do stuff, it's great for that.
Isn't that amazing? So, yeah, I love that everyone's all over the country or all over the world. And people that you don't really know except for that. And when someone needs support or is doing something, I love that aspect of it. It's just a whole like-minded community.
Right. So you went up to Stone Mountain the other day. Your goal was 6 a.m. Was it 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.? Was that your goal?
Yes. And first of all, I did not get there by 6 a.m.
Okay.
Because I didn't sleep well, so I wanted. So I got there by 8.
Okay.
And I started at around 8:30.
Okay.
But I made it 7 hours.
Okay.
So yes, so I'm training for Vermont. I'm
right.
Going to Vermont, and I started great. And I actually ran into people doing the event because
right.
I had my 29 of 29 shirt on.
Nice.
But you know, I get to the 5th or 6th hour mark, and I really start to I started feeling nauseous. I actually contacted Brent Pease, you know, the coach for it, because I feel I'm not fueling correctly. Something's going wrong. And I did Utah last year, and I had to quit in the middle. I got severe altitude sickness,
right?
And just was having. I just don't want to have a tough time. I just want to make it. I'm not looking for a time. I just want to make it,
right?
So
now I wish I was going with you because I would totally.
Could you just come?
If you want
you
to
be my coach.
If you want to pay whatever that is,
I've tried to get someone else in. It's totally sold out.
But
in
they
a
do,
waiting list.
No, I know they. But I'm saying like people always drop out the week of whatever.
Okay.
So I've
if
done,
I pay $4,000 or whatever it is, you'll come.
I
don't like to tell people how much it is because then they're just like, you're crazy.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what was eye-opening for me,
yeah.
Jenny. When I posted in my community, the obstacle racing, do you know what obstacle racing is?
No, but now I want to do
that.
You
should totally, yes.
I'm hearing and I'm like.
Much less expensive and it's local. People running through the mud and going over walls and that stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, people see the price tag and they get freaked out for it, you know. And there was a lot of judgment, like, oh, must be nice for rich white people to do this. So, and I had some of that too.
Mm-hmm.
I had some of that too. So, you know, all cards on the table. I went for a media company who ended up not using my story. So I did it myself, which was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But my event was paid for. I paid for my own travel, but the price tag of the event. And in the event, when you pay either the $4,000 for a 3-person tent or $10,000 for a 2-person tent, you get everything. It's all the food.
Right.
It's everything. So first of all, if you just add that up for other stuff that you do, it's not as bad, right? If you go to do the New York Marathon and all the travel and all the food,
right?
So anyhow, but here's the other thing. I had this idea about entitled rich white people, right? And then I started talking to a lot of these people on the mountain, and guess how people get to be really rich? They work their ass off.
Right. They worked their ass off.
They didn't inherit it, right? They didn't fucking, they're not kings.
Mm-hmm.
And so it honestly was a big aha for me as far as an insight, because we're taught not to judge people like, oh, don't judge that homeless guy because he might be mentally ill. But we hardly think about it the other way, to not judge this wealthy person.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And so it honestly, like, without going into specifics, I just met a few people that was like, oh, and that guy like owns a plane, but you wouldn't know that. Because he's just a fucking guy who got up every day and worked and built
works
something.
And works hard, exactly.
So that was a big part of it. And then, yeah, I think it's the, for an event like that, just like Jesse's event that he just did, it's mental isn't, like, you want to say 90% of it. You definitely want to do some training. You definitely want to not go straight from couch to 29 or 29.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's, can you just keep going?
And that's what I want to work on, like that push when you feel sick. And when, you know, Jesse said he thinks he broke his toe in the middle of that event, like, what would I do in that
situation?
Did
you have people at either event, either that you talked to beforehand or that did you share a tent with someone that's like, hey, I need you to coach me up if I want to quit?
I had incredible people. I had a friend from Atlanta in my tent, and then I met people, and those I ended up having to be brought down off the mountain
because you were like legit altitude sickness,
legit sick. But by then I slept for 6 or 7 hours, which obviously then that took a lot of runs I couldn't do, and I had them take me back to where I had to go down. Then I finished that, and I had time for one more loop, and I was not in good shape, and people talked me through every step.
That's great.
Of the way.
Because Vermont, the altitude isn't even that high.
No, well, that's why I went there this year. That's why I'm going there.
Right. Utah is much higher.
Yeah.
Vermont, you start at, I don't know, 2,000 and go up to 3,000.
Yeah,
like it's
I
not.
Think it will be easier.
So you have or you haven't tried Vermont?
No, this will be my first one.
Okay, well, it's also it's more climbs, but it's a shorter climb.
Right, and so I don't know what it is compared to Stone Mountain. So that's where I've been training, just going up.
Okay, so I just ask you this: how long does it take you on a nice brisk pace to get to the top of Stone Mountain?
About 26 minutes.
Great. So double that.
What do you mean?
It's about twice as long.
Oh, okay. I thought it was only a mile something, but it must be steeper.
Right. Stone Mountain is 700 or 800 feet. but I'm saying that's if it's taking you an hour each time to get to the top and the 15 minute that still gives you plenty of time to get 17 trips in the 36 hours.
Well, that's what, and like when I went,
I slept 8 hours.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but you're a super athlete.
I'm not a super athlete.
Your average super athlete. Yes.
I'm not a super athlete. There were guys lapping me. There were guys that finished in the middle of the night.
Did you have any trouble? Did you feel sick? Or what do you do when you hit that wall?
I could have pushed through the wall at night. Uh-huh. I stopped at about 10 p.m., and I could have probably done one or two more. Mm-hmm. And if I had someone with me that was like, hey, let's kind of keep going, maybe I could have. But I was thrilled with the way I did it. The best advice that I can give is what Jesse says is everyone's like, what's your plan? You gonna stay up all night? What are you gonna do? And Jesse's like, do a couple, get a feel for the mountain, then decide what your plan is. And so that's what I did. I got two or three, and I was like, 10 of these is probably good. Mm-hmm. And then I got to bed. I went to bed at 10 and woke up, and you know, I only had 7 the next morning. So I got done by whatever, 2 or 3 o'clock.
Right.
But I could have slept less and got more done.
But you felt good about it.
I felt great about it.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm determined. I've got Jesse's finisher's vest. It's hanging on my wall.
I saw that.
It has a lot of mud on it. I wonder what happened to him.
Well, it's rainy and cold. Yeah. I mean, I think you can underprepare gear-wise. Mm-hmm. So pack everything. That's, you know, when in doubt, fucking pack everything. That's what I tell people all the time, because who cares if you don't need it? You're so happy. I brought a wetsuit top, mm-hmm. which is like, I didn't think I'd need it at all. And then sure enough, the next day it was snowing a little bit. So you were kind of always a little bit wet. And I was like, I put that on that morning and it was awesome. And I was never cold.
Did you use your poles?
Yes, absolutely. And I was like, who's going to need poles? I won't need those for the third or fourth trip. I did one trip without them, and I was like, I'm an idiot. So that's absolutely bring poles. Did you have poles?
I did in Utah, and I just started using them again because I don't like to hold anything. Neither do I.
Yeah, trust me, I'd never used them. I've never even been skiing. So I literally had never used the poles. Mm-hmm. But yes, definitely use the poles.
Okay. Good advice. I think you should come to the event. Help me through it.
And then the other thing is, you know, as far as the food thing goes, that's the thing. You have to know what your stomach likes and doesn't like. And I've done enough long endurance runs to know. Because some people can eat goos and gels for 24 hours. I can't. I can eat real food.
Yeah.
But not too much real food. So I can tell you what I didn't do was I did not go in for lunch. And I did not go in for dinner. Because it's too easy. It's warm. It's nice. Just keep snacking on what they give you or bring the stuff. That's my thing.
Right.
But some people went in and like took all their shit off and ate down lunch and did the taco meat. And like I say, don't do that.
But you had real food on the trail.
I just ate whatever they gave us.
Yeah.
At some point, they brought out ramen soup. And that was like a couple noodles.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was the greatest to me. Mm-hmm. Because it's a little more substantial than just a little bar.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I did not go in for lunch or dinner because I think that's like too easy to stay off
and
the mountain
get
for
tired.
3 hours.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it and terrified all at the same time. But I'm doing it. I'm excited that I just even signed myself up and I'm doing it.
For sure. And just be like, honestly, like on that Friday night, or the Thursday night when everyone gets together, you're not shy. I would just stand up and say, hey, I failed last time I did this. If you see me out there, please encourage me. Mm-hmm. And then people will, because people do anyway.
That's a good idea.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a good idea. But I am shy. Where'd you get that I'm not shy?
You just told me that you had all this chutzpah and you didn't.
I do, but I'm still an introvert.
Is that possible to be an introvert?
It is. I think so.
I don't believe you. All right. So, let's talk about, this is towards the, I always do this Atlanta favorites questions I ask people.
Yes.
Are you ready?
I think I'm ready.
Okay. What is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
My go-to order is scrambled eggs and hash browns with, smothered onions, jalapenos, and grilled tomatoes.
Oh, interesting.
Done. What's yours?
So I like that bowl they do now.
I saw that. That does look good.
And then I just put some hot sauce on it.
I just ate there yesterday because I did a 10K at the cystic fibrosis 10K.
Dude, you should have messaged me. I could have done that with you.
Okay.
And I love Stone Mountain, by the way. It's just so far from here. I used to live in Kirkwood. It was a little bit closer. Right. It's just such a schlep to get there. But yeah, so I don't like to just go up and down. I like the the Cherokee Trail, which is like a 4.5 mile loop.
I've never done that.
And then I go up and down.
Okay.
And then it mixes it up. So if you want to do like a three trips, that's 18 miles. That's a lot.
That's a good idea. Is it hilly, the trail around?
No, it's just nice and undulating,
okay,
if you will.
I will. I'm going to go try that.
So what is your favorite restaurant currently in Atlanta?
My favorite restaurant currently is probably still Rumi Kitchen.
Okay.
On Roswell Road, because I love Middle Eastern Lebanese food. There's also a new Israeli restaurant called Aziza on the west side. I'm like obsessed with Israeli food.
Yeah.
And I want to go back. I want to open like a falafel stand.
Really?
Maybe.
Do you think that's coming?
Maybe. Not a falafel stand, but I have an idea.
Did you go to Yala? You ever go to Yala?
Yes. Love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Do you know those guys?
Yes.
The General Muir people?
I know Todd, yes.
Yep.
I love his when he does like the soup pop-up in the winter. I like that because it's like all we have is soup and bread. That's it.
Right. So I was going, when I was doing these interviews and had an office over on the Beltline, and I was eating Fred's like 3 times a week, and I gained 15 pounds.
You did?
Kidding. I'm not kidding.
Well, that's because you're eating all that bread.
It was so good. I would eat Fred's and Yala like on the daily. And I had to stop. And actually, Todd, if you're listening, he owes me an interview. We had a meeting set up
at the one at Tech.
We had an interview set up, and he was like, he went to the wrong one. He went to the one at the Beltline, and we still haven't picked a new date. And that was like 2 years ago.
Todd, do it.
Right?
We needed like a Jew food throwdown.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Let's do the Jew food throwdown.
Okay.
That's I'll a really good idea. It. Have we had that in Atlanta?
I don't think so, but I can organize that.
Right. All right. Well, invite me.
Okay.
And I will eat everything.
Okay.
I got to go to that Waffle House thing. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah. What? I didn't even know what that was. But it
so it's
awesome.
Through the Giving Kitchen.
Yeah.
And they auction off. They do this auction, I guess, every year. And one of the things they do is a seat at this thing called, I don't know what they call it. It's not the Waffle House Throwdown, because that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But it's Kevin Gillespie and Chris Hall cook Waffle House dishes, their take on Waffle House dishes. So,
at the Waffle House?
Yes.
That's awesome.
And it was pretty amazing.
Amazing.
Kroger or Publix?
Publix.
She said with a sigh. Why did you say that?
Well, because there's a really weird guy at my Publix now, and he's a little too chatty. So I've started to go to Kroger, which is nearby.
Can't you just pretend you're on a phone call?
I do, but he like waves me over to his lane. I don't like it.
Okay.
And then when I ask another neighbor about it, they're like, oh my gosh, I know exactly who you're talking about. And everyone knows this guy.
Right. Well, just have boundaries and don't talk to that guy.
You're right. Publix.
Okay. Complete the sentence. I take Marta blank. Speaking of creepy, there's now a creepy van in my neighborhood. That's what my kids call those, too, by the way. It's like, Dad, creepy van.
Creepy van. I love it. And it's a white van. It doesn't say candy on the side.
It may as well.
I take Marta when I'm going to a concert or a large sporting event.
Okay. Rank these in order of importance to you. Why are you laughing already?
I don't know.
It's a very fun quiz, isn't it?
It is. I like it. Go ahead.
Braves, United, Falcons, Hawks. Rank those in importance to you. Super Jenny.
What if there is no importance? United.
You could say that.
United, Hawks, and that's it.
That's all you care about?
Yeah, if I care about those. I'm not a bit too sporty. Watching sports.
Do you ever get hired to do sports things?
No.
The stadium didn't reach out to you?
To sing the national anthem? No. No one has reached
no,
out
to open.
Me.
You know, they get, like, Kevin has a place in the, you know, in the new stadium.
Oh,
whatever.
They have. Yeah. No.
Nobody ever reaches out to you and says?
They have, yeah, but I'm not interested. I don't like sports.
You don't like, you obviously clearly don't like money.
I don't like money. No, it's just not my thing to be in the stadium. I don't know.
Okay.
It's too big. It's too. If you look at my spaces, there are all these quirky, weird places.
So you don't want to be in the big.
Yeah.
Got it. What? I lost my train of thought there.
That just threw you.
What is your favorite festival in Atlanta?
My favorite festival is the Inman Park Festival.
Why is that?
Because I love all the walking around where all those homes are and in the park, even more than the festival. I just like that area that it's in. And I love folk art. So there seems to be a lot more folk art there than the Piedmont Park Festival. I just like it. And I like the time of year it's in.
All right. The final question is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
Todd Ginsberg, of course, okay. Because he owes you one.
Right. Besides
and who
him.
Who should you have next? Do you like to, who do you like to interview? All kinds of,
every which way. Yeah.
Have you had Brent Pease?
No. Why do I know that name?
You'll have to look it up. I'm not telling you.
Is he the coach guy you were just talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's super fascinating, and he does Ironmans, and he pushes his brother.
Oh.
In the wheelchair.
His brother's Kyle, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I've heard of him.
He's pretty amazing story.
Okay.
Or you could have Colin O'Brady, the new partner of the 29-0-2019.
Oh, he partnered up with
yeah,
Jesse?
Yeah, he did.
Cool. I actually interviewed him while I was on the, like, coming down the gondola.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Got to do a lap with Colin.
You could have my mother. She's fascinating.
Usually it helps if they're related to Atlanta in some form or fashion.
They were. She was a Broadway. She was a broadcast journalist back in the 70s and had her own radio show here.
Okay. Colin, though, not so much.
No. So you like them to be related to Atlanta. I'll have to
It is the Atlanta
that.
Podcast. They don't have to be, but...
It's the Atlanta podcast for now.
Like basically anything that comes... Like, so the Super Bowl was here. I interviewed people mm-hmm. about the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Or at the Super Bowl.
Right.
So it's like, I'll... You know, if a movie comes here, I want to talk to actors from the movies. But you know what I'm saying, for the most part. So Colin doesn't quite fit, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have to think about that. There's so many great...
You picked a couple good ones, though.
Yeah.
We'd start there.
Todd's awesome. You know, it'd be interesting. Another person in the food world is Linton Hopkins and his evolution of his restaurants. And then he just changed a restaurant. And
What does he own?
He owned Restaurant Eugene and H&F.
Where are those?
In Buckhead.
Okay.
But he was one of the, you know, he's one of the original, like, fine dining people. Now he, like, makes menus and food for Delta. Like, just all over
the place. Let's actually talk about Buckhead before I let you go. Because... Buckhead used to be the only thing people even knew about outside of Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
If you said, hi, I'm from Atlanta, they go, yeah, I was there once. What's it called? Moose something, right? And you go, Buckhead? They go, yes, right?
Yes.
And they went out drinking there or whatever.
Right.
And it really was, what the hell is going on here?
There was I'm a guy scared. I have to get out of this neighborhood immediately.
There was a guy fly out of his car, but he stopped and did it twice. So if people went out, You lived in the burbs and maybe you had a local bar you went to and then you'd come into the city and do Buckhead. And now in the last 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. all these amazing neighborhoods are popping. In-town living is a real thing. Is Buckhead suffering because of it, or will Buckhead always be Buckhead?
I think Buckhead will always be Buckhead, and it seems to be in the middle of a huge evolution of all these high-rises being built. And
What do you mean? It's what's been happening since the 1980s. What they've been doing is building high-rises.
Well, it's even more and more. And just like right in that center where, you know, there were old, like, Rio Bravo and all these things. Now it's like a 30-story building. So much is happening, and the streets of Buckhead now has been bought by Jamestown Properties, and they're going to sort of redo what's happening there.
Because they realize everyone's coming down to the Beltline, and they're mad,
yes.
probably, right?
And the stores are just too high-end. How many people are going to be at Gucci this afternoon? They only have to sell the one
right.
purse, probably, to
right.
pay their rent. So I think they're going to try to make it more approachable and walkable. But I think it's not the same as it was back in the 80s and 90s with all the small bars. Those are slowly disappearing,
right?
Being replaced by much larger venues, in
right.
my opinion. But I still think, I mean, I don't really live right in that area, but I think it's a great place to be in business. There's still so many thousands of people roaming around right there. But it's lost that old charm that it had back when my brothers are a little older than me, but they all hung out in Buckhead growing up.
I hung out. I mean, mm-hmm. as soon as I could drink.
There's a few of the old bars left, off East Andrews, you know,
right.
Irby and stuff, but not many. I'm sure those buildings are for sale for the right price because people want to build up.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Are we going to Stone Mountain now?
When you posted, I was like, I might go out there for a little bit, but then I forgot what we ended up having going on. Oh, yeah. My kid started playing football and his team had a thing.
Okay.
But no, keep doing that. Keep posting that you're going out there.
Okay.
And I'll probably join you one of these times.
I know. And I want to know about obstacle racing.
Yeah. We'll talk about that for sure.
Okay.
All right. Good to see you.